This is exactly right.
On the 12th season of Tenfold More Wicked, we investigate a series of compelling mysteries from the city of Fall River, Massachusetts, where problems started generations before Lizzie Borden's murders made her a household name. Join me as we cover the misfortunes that have befallen this infamous town for more than 150 years, including the Great Fire of 1843. Season 12 is out now on Exactly Right. New episodes on Mondays. Follow Tenfold More Wicked on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's that at the foot of my bed? It's spooky and kooky. I'm pretty sure it's dead. It's coming this way. Wait a minute.
Hey, boo! It's me, Roz. I don't have much to say in this intro today, but I am so excited for you to hear this conversation. There's this Instagram account that I've been following for a little while now, and I know that a lot of people that listen to this podcast follow it, and so I reached out and got the person that runs it on the show. That Instagram is called at haunted.historian, and the person that runs it is named Connor Gossel. And Connor is a paranormal investigator. Turns out we got some stories. And as I kind of teased last week, I wait till the end of this conversation because it's one of the most frightening stories. I don't know why, but it just got me. And Connor can tell a story. So it's a good one. I like this conversation a lot, and I hope you will as well. And as always, if you want a little extra, go over to Patreon. We got a couple of little clips on there. I took a little bit out of my little rapid-fire, unexplained paranormal phenomena section of the show. Put some of that on Patreon. So we talk about aliens. Turns out I asked Connor about haunted dolls, one of my favorite topics. And Connor owns multiple haunted dolls. So we talk about that. And we also talk about when you see a haunted place and it just, everything about it looks haunted, but then it's like, it's not. And what do you do in that event? Because if you don't know about this Instagram page, The Haunted Historian, it is so cool. It's gorgeous photographs of a lot of like obscure haunted places, like places not always your typical haunted places that you see on the TV shows or you're reading the books, you know. The Haunted Historian really gives you, it exposes you to some kind of unknown haunted places. And there's always a great write-up about the history of it. And that's why I really like everything that Connor does on The Haunted Historian on Instagram. So again, if you want to hear a little bit more, go to patreon.com/RozDresfiles, also a link in the bio. And I finally decided to do something that I've been asked to do for a long time now. Listen, I do not claim to be a makeup artist or anything like that, but when you're known as a drag queen, people always want you to do makeup tutorials, and I've done a little bit of it over the years. I'm not going to lie, I've been approached to do, actually a couple of times I've been approached to do some of these, like, I don't even know what you call them, like really viral YouTube or Facebook pages or whatever that do makeup tutorials with drag queens. And I've never wanted to do it. I think a lot of it has to do with not wanting to be seen out of the full face. And I don't know, at this point, I just kind of don't care. And so I thought, where better to do it than Patreon? So I put up a two-part video. The first part came out this week, showing you how I do like highlighting and contouring and take you through that journey of how I transform into Roz Dresfiles. So check that out. Link in the description of this episode. And go follow The Haunted Historian on Instagram. All right. Here's my conversation with Connor Gossel. On with the show. I am joined by an in-celebrity today, Connor Gossel, a.k.a. The Haunted Historian. Hello, Connor. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me.
I'm a little starstruck. I love your Instagram so much. I'm always like in awe of people that are good at Instagram because I am not. And you really give it to the children. You are very good at it. So thank you for taking the time to join me.
Absolutely, I appreciate the very kind words there.
How did you get into this whole Instagram haunted historian game?
Yeah, you know, I have been an investigator since the middle of high school. And once college kicked off and the group of friends that I had, I kind of traveled all around the Midwest doing investigations. And we all went our separate ways to do our studies at respective universities. The opportunity to investigate wasn't as prevalent. And, you know, being an avid horror, ghost, and paranormal enthusiast, I really had the urge all the time to just head out and spend a hellacious amount of money all out of my own pocket to rent out an entire place and just do an investigation. But being in college and, you know, a stereotypical broke college student, I did not have the funds to do that. So I really just made The Haunted Historian almost 3 years ago now, really just kind of initially to get all the horror jitters out of me and places that I was thinking about, posted on there and share people's stories and their accounts, their encounters, what's going on in their neck of the woods. And, you know, never really expected for it to balloon to what it is at this point in time. You know, really started out with the smallest intentions, but you know, that's how it all happened, with just a desire to get all the spookiness in my mind out onto some physical format.
So how does that work? People, they send you, like, you know, you get submissions from around the world?
Yeah, you know, that doesn't happen so much anymore in the sense that we get more submissions than ever of people's homes, of places that they want to see covered. But we aren't able to do as many of them anymore. And that's just because if you start from the bottom of the page and you follow up to the quality of the posts now, it significantly gets better picture, better image quality. And a lot of places that people want to cover, they don't have the images of, or a good image does not exist online. So a lot of it now is just an extensive amount of research by my team and myself, trying to closely match locales and regions that people are wanting us to really dive into.
So where do people, like, I was thinking, like, what's based on what people tell you or submissions or requests or whatever, like, would you say that there's a region or a place around the world that's like the most haunted?
My hesitation in answering that was because I was trying to think how to exactly say it. I think that there are countries that have a wild propensity for paranormal, just given their history and how much longer they've been around. And then there are some countries who put such an emphasis on the supernatural and other realms in the afterlife that they just seem to interact with the living in such a heightened manner. And a lot of those places are places in the South Pacific or in Eastern Asia, or if you know, deviate away from the New World, like the US and Australia, and go over into Europe, there are places that have been around for a lot of them, a millennia, beyond even some of the oldest places here in the US. And they just have such history behind them. So, you know, a lot of the times those are the places I want to cover more of, but the vast majority of followers being here in the US, it's not always as relatable for them. But absolutely, other countries have such a different characteristic in their haunting.
See, I always wonder, I think we all have this idea, we're just conditioned, and there is a lot of fact, I think, or truth to this, that the older a place, the more haunted it is, which I guess would make sense if you think about, like, oh yeah, so many things have happened in a place, so there's more opportunities for ghosts. But, like, that's not always the case, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, you're completely right. I mean, I certainly have driven by an old, dreary building with my friends and pointed at it just like, oh, that place is definitely haunted. But, I mean, I think being around longer, having that more extensive history gives a location more of a chance and more of a time to have developed kind of misfortune and mishaps in families or caretakers or facility management. So it's usually just those older buildings that have a darker history because they come from an era when safety wasn't a prime concern. They come from an era, if they were sanatoriums or hospitals, where medical practices weren't quite what they are now, or they come from points in time where life didn't last as long, where medicine wasn't as great, where relations between families was a lot more hostile because there wasn't as many, you know, protections by the law. So I think it's really just those places come from a darker period in human history in a lot of senses, and it really opens them up to being haunted compared to places today.
I mean, have you ever encountered a jail, a hospital, a sanatorium, like any of these abandoned places that wasn't haunted? I feel like they all are.
I'm racking through my mind here. The one that I would say I never got any clear-cut definitive evidence. I was flown out to Dallas into Mineral Wells, and I traveled all the way to its eastern border because there was an old Vietnam War hospital there called Beach Army Hospital that the owners were interested in opening up to the public. And I knew the owner personally, and I joked around with him about it. I had no idea that he was going to be bringing me out there to actually check it out and run through that whole operation. And one thing I told my team after it was that I had never been so comfortable in a building that had the stories that the owners were telling me. Usually you're all kind of clumped together. You're walking line, just in straight lines down the hallways, all kind of bundled up, peering in rooms very cautiously. But I was just, while he was giving us a tour, walking in and out of rooms, going into adjacent hallways, just not a care in the world. And I didn't really notice my behavior and how fine I felt in there until after I left. And there were some things that happened, but it was the first time I'd ever been inside a facility with its history and backstory where I left and part of me thought that place might not be haunted. I think this place might be fine. I'll do what the owner would like and open it to the public and offer the stories. But, you know, if whatever evidence they get, they're the first ones to ever experience it, because I sure as hell didn't see anything.
Do you get scared?
Oh, I get horrified. One of the things that not bugs me, but I think dissuades a lot of would-be investigators from heading out is that so many people will look at investigators doing their own hunts and they'll say something in the comments, or they'll say something however they interact with their fans, and just be like, you know, I could be locked up in there for 2 or 3 days and I wouldn't even care. Like, I'm so brave. Nothing would scare me. None of this bothers me at all. I'd punch a ghost in the face and everything along right. those lines. And it's like, you know, investigate isn't about being macho. And especially when you're showing what you see to the world, you know, they want to have that human component. They want to see your emotion. They want to see how you interact with fear. I think anybody who goes into an investigation and says that they're not afraid or they're not worried of what an outcome could be, I think they're partially lying, at least, because I am terrified. I leave most investigations wondering and questioning why I'm involved in this whatsoever.
Well, I always wonder too, like, if I was plopped into like a super haunted place, it would be really interesting to think about how much of this is like my preconceived notion. You know, I think I'm terrified if I go to a haunted place knowing that it's, you know, I've heard so many stories about all the things that happen at this place and have happened there. And, you know, I think that really affects how I would feel, my comfort level while there. But, and then you go, you know, do I really have instincts that tell me that, you know, I'm picking up on vibes or whatever?
Yeah, and that's a completely valid point to make. I mean, there are a lot of, I like to believe that I can kind of feel if a place is haunted, but at this point in time, if I ever feel comfortable, like I did in that hospital, it could just be because I've been in so many.
That's what I was going to say. I'm like, is that a sign that you need to, like, get, you know, up the ante and head to some real spooky places?
Exactly. That's the fear nowadays, that if I want to really get scared and into an investigation, I got to find a place that nobody's ever been to, which is hard to come across these days.
Well, that's what I love about your Instagram, is that there's so many places that I never knew about. And it got me really thinking about, because, you know, I talk to so many people about haunted places, and sometimes they'll have these amazing stories about places that, like, most people don't know. Like, there's so many haunted places out there. Sure, there's, like, the ones that, you know, make all the rounds on the paranormal shows. But then there's, like, you know, someone lives in a house for years, and they might not be the personality type that is like, oh, I'm going to go tell everyone. You know, sometimes people just live with it for years. Sometimes people, you know, it just depends. I mean, those are kind of like the ones that we want to hear about, because, you know, no one else has ever heard the stories. I mean, do you encounter that where you stumble on these places where you're like, oh, this is what we're looking for. We've never heard this story before.
Yeah, you know, that is what we really try to focus on for most of our posts, is, you know, finding exactly what you just mentioned, the locations that no one really thinks about, or none of the shows really go to, or isn't really given as much attention, but the history behind them and the accounts that you find from the caretakers or from locals are just truly horrific, or just truly mesmerizing to hear about. And that's kind of why, you know, it's difficult. The longer the page lasts, the harder it gets to find that content, places that people beyond that periphery haven't really heard about. So I would say these days, doing a post and the research for it and the picture rights and the write-ups, it's like a 3 or 4 hour process putting it all together. And, you know, some days we always try to do it every other day, but then some days there's just no location that excites us. There's nothing that we look at like, this is new and original content that would benefit people. And So sometimes there's like a week where we don't post because we're like diving deep every single day trying to find that spot, and we're just not stumbling across it. And then the very next day you'll hop back on and you find like 12 of them. So
right. I mean, I deal with that with like getting guests on my podcast too, where I'm like, I need someone with a good story or get something good to talk about. I totally get it. Do you have a post where you're like, I feel like everyone that has an Instagram is like, whether they want to say it or not, they're like, this post right here is what I aim to recreate for the rest of my Instagram career. This is just the perfect post. Do you have one of those?
I would like to think I have a number of them, but it's for varying reasons. They, above all else, because the content that there was, or the lack of insight a lot of people had in that location, seemed to surpass the other posts. Sometimes it's petty and it's just like, oh my god, this post got the most likes. I hope that just keeps happening. And then sometimes it's just a place that has an incredible story and truly unique accounts that I haven't really ever come across in my travels or in the things that I've read. But for whatever reason, it's popping into my head right now, my favorite location that's kind of just the quintessential haunted house. And I'm pulling it up right now on my phone, so I don't want to mess up its name. It's based in Belvedere, Illinois. It's called the Nellie Dunton House. And if memory serves me properly, it goes along the lines of, she was a widower. Her husband died in war, as a classic cliche. I don't mean that as anything bad against her, but that's always how kind of the romantic horror novel goes. Mm-hmm. And she ended up drowning herself in the river behind the house. And what's horrifying about it is that numerous families have lived there in between. And I believe to this day, it's a museum. And one thing that the families and that current staff, and even some visitors, have reported is that there are numerous times, usually towards the end of the evening or going into the night, where the front door and the back door will just open up. And a lot of people kind of like chalk it up to a draft, even though, of course, you know, it's locked. And it's happening at the same time every night. But it always starts, the back door swings open. People will go check it out. There's nothing there. And then the front door, like 20 seconds, swings open. and they never close themselves. They open right up just like that, like somebody's coming in the back door and walking out the front. And the creepiest thing about it is that on numerous occasions, and if you go online, pretty sure you can actually find some images that individuals have taken. There are wet footprints that walk all the way from the back door.
No! Oh my God.
And there's just so many other very unique occurrences at the Nellie Dunton house, and where it's not often these days I read about a location and get like shivers up my spine, but I can just kind of picture that. And I'm like, somebody's got to send this to Hollywood. That is horrifying.
That is so good. Oh my God. The wet footprints. Okay. That gave me shivers. When did you know that you had a hit with your account?
I'm not sure. In a lot of ways, I'm aware that it's popular. I don't know that I would consider it a hit. I guess that's just me. I have a thing not against Instagram influencers, but like I could never consider myself an influencer. I can never consider it any degree of fame or anything like that. I'm happy the page is connected with people, but I guess the one point there's been where I kind of was verified in some sense, like okay, maybe there's more to this than I'm humbly giving it. And that was just the turn of the year this past year, and I woke up on, I think it was like January 3rd, and the page had been verified, and I'm like, oh God, that is not something I ever expected to happen.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm like over here all Hollywood, like trying to make you sound all like cocky or whatever, and you're so funny how you're like so humble, and I'm like, come on, brag.
You'll never hear me bragging. Like, you know, it's my picture's not on there for a reason. Like I said at the beginning, you know, it's really meant to be, you know, the story of our paranormal experiences, the shared community both here in the US and around the world. You know, it sounds cheesy as hell to say, but you know, the haunted historian is kind of like an umbrella term. Everybody's the haunted historian. Everybody is involved in this investigation. This is the story of us, not just myself.
So let's talk about you as a paranormal investigator. Did you grow up in a haunted house? I feel like that's usually how it works.
Yeah, my parents denied it for a long time, but As we got older, my brother started asking questions about things that happened in the house over the course of the years that we lived there. They kind of started to, my mother especially, kind of started to give way, like, yeah, there was something going on in that home. And I actually, for the life of me, I couldn't tell you how it actually came about, but Travel Channel ended up including our home in a series outlining childhood nightmares and stuff like that.
So, what?
Yeah, if you go on to, what is it? I think it's on Discovery Plus, My Childhood Nightmare. It's like I think it's like episode 4, and it's just like outlining, you know, what happened in my home growing up. You know, they took some liberties, but they got most of it correct.
Did you get reenacted?
I did. They did pretty well for me. I had a friend who's just you know, a normal looking dude, you know, a head of brown hair, just typical guy. And the kid that they got to play him was just some dude with this big mohawk just sitting down next to me. And we're watching it just cracking up, like, oh my God, they really just said, you know what, we don't care who the hell plays Nick. Let's just get some white guy in there and it's going to work out.
I love talking to people that have been reenacted. You know, I talked to a lot of people that were on Celebrity Ghost Stories, and it's always funny to hear who gets offended, who they choose to reenact you. Who sometimes the wigs are a little crazy, but okay, I have to see that. So this, it's you telling the story of what happened?
Yeah, it's me telling the story and being reenacted. It's funny you say that. That's like, we were more excited to see who they cast to play us than we were to actually do the episode. But I had no complaints, and my friend didn't either. We just thought it was so wildly ridiculous who they cast for him. But it was a fun experience. It was the whole ordeal of filming it was much longer than I would have thought, but it gives me some cool insight going forward, since shows like that get made all the time about what the process is like.
Yeah. What is the story?
Well, We were the first house in our neighborhood to be constructed. I want to say the year was right around 1996, 1997. And
where was this?
This was in Beaver Creek, Ohio. Just south of Dayton, down there in like the southwestern portion of the state. It was very underdeveloped at that point in time, in that there were bunch of forests, bunch of rivers, cornfields everywhere. You know, we weren't living in like BFE, but it was kind of like the one step above there on the rung. But, and I should do better about it. I've never really looked into the history. And I think a lot of it is because I never really wanted to know the history. The one thing I could have guessed about our home is that that area of Ohio is absolutely littered in Indian mounds. And we lived surrounded by forests and cornfields and everything of that nature. So that's always what I kind of, you know, appeased my mind by saying was just, you know what? We were probably pretty close to a mound or something, and things were acting up inside of our house. And as more houses got built, the activity stopped in our house for the most part. It was really kind of just all the way up till I was 13 years old. And it was everything from, to give you two specific occurrences, my oldest brother wakes up one day and he comes down to the breakfast table and he's like, "Hey, Shane, Shane is my brother." And he asks my brother, Shane, "Were you standing in my room last night?" And Shane had a kind of this like history of sleepwalking. And he's like, "No, I was awake like 2 hours past you last night. Like, I was not walking around." And I could verify that because I slept in the same room as Shane. And so Colin's like, "Huh. I like woke up and I thought I saw like this like weird gray misty figure of you just standing in front of my bed." And we kind of laughed, but I'd had some experiences. I didn't really like hold it against them. I didn't say anything, but I didn't hold it against them. And like one month later, I'm in the bunk bed that Shane and I shared. And I wake up and I think Shane is standing in front of my bed. And I kind of just start talking like, "Shane, what are you doing? Are you sleepwalking?" And it had the same look that Colin had described, very gray, very misty. And I'm kind of like getting out from under my sheets, like seeing if he's okay. And as I'm getting out, I hear Shane on the top bunk of the bed kind of roll over like, "Are you okay? Why are you getting up?" And I look back to the edge of the bed and it's just gone. Now, I will say, in the reenactment in the episode, they decided to make it into this like gray cloaked demonic entity crawling out from under my bed and trying to like drag me under or something. And I saw that, I just like, okay, well, I can't send this to my family now because I don't want them to think that I was like out there just like, "Our house was possessed by the devil. It was the darkest thing that ever was." I think the creepiest thing that ever happened in the home, and it was completely benign, nothing wrong with it, I think from the ages of 12 to 15, I had my own room at this point. Every single night, or at least every other night, I would lay down in bed. The lights in the hallway would still be on. Being the younger brother, I went to bed kind of usually before everybody else. And the lights would usually stay on or they'd click off. But I would usually hear the footsteps at the very least of my parents coming up the stairs and going to bed once everybody was passed out and where they're supposed to be. And then my mother would come into my room and she would sit down on the edge of my bed and she would kind of just rub my back or, you know, jostle my hair or something, or just like sit there, like pat my leg. And I was never really asleep. I had terrible sleep problems as a child. It usually took like an hour or two to pass out. So I was usually awake, but being like a 12, 15 year old, I'm acting like I'm passed out. And years later, years down the road, I cannot remember the context that it came up in, but I asked my mother around my brothers one time, that where I just mentioned her coming into my room and sitting down and doing that for years. I think I was saying something along the lines like, you know, "It's really sweet of you to always come in there and check on me. And you'd stay in there for like 15, 45 minutes. Like that was, you know, it was
I already know where this is going and I don't like it."
Yeah, you're probably thinking it correctly. She kind of like laughs. Like I remember like come like she's like drinking water, and like water came out of her mouth, but she like was like chuckling. She's like, "Why in the hell would I go into my grown son's room, all three of you, and sit there and pat you guys for 45 minutes every single night. And we all just kind of looked at each other because they had experienced that sometimes, but it happened to me almost every single night. And she swore up and down. She's like, I can tell you without a shrapnel of doubt, I never came into your room and did that. So for 3 years of my life, that was where it was happening. And the only thing I've ever been able to think about is that is the room where my grandma would stay when she visited. And right when it started is when she passed away. So I'm pretty sure that she was visiting that room for years in the afterlife, where she would always stay at our house when she came to Ohio. And just, I guess, since I was there in her old room, just doing that. But my mom was just like, you were asleep. You probably were having a dream. I'm like, the same dream every night for 3 years. Like, I was wide awake. My eyes were open sometimes. I felt the indentation on the bed. Like, it's enough for me to now, 10 years later, sit here and talk to you about. It wasn't a dream. This happened so much.
Oh, I love how you thought that your mom was being all sweet to you. And she's like, no.
You thought wrong. That's not what I'm doing.
Oh my God, that is so, like, I mean, scary. I dealt with grandma stuff, ghost stuff too as a kid, and it's like, it's just like a weird thing where I'm like, okay, it's not like scary because it's my grandma, but it's like, you know, it's something.
I still don't want to turn around and see anybody's ghost. I don't care who it is.
Right, exactly. So when you said that your parents kind of like denied it or whatever, I mean, did it come out that they did have their own experiences the whole
time? Nothing specific ever came out. It's nothing ever came out for my father. My mother was more so just kind of willing to concede, like, without saying any details of her own, like, you know what, it's possible, you know what, that house was weird sometimes, I'll admit it, like this or that. And I never really pushed her for it. She's a very religious woman, doesn't necessarily turn a blind eye to that topic matter, but it's not anything she likes to talk about. So I wasn't going to sit there like poking and poking, like, no, tell me, no, tell me. Maybe she will one day, but it's sounding like my brothers and I got the worst of it.
So when did you start investigating?
I started investigating beginning of my junior year in high school, and the Beaver Creek was just starting to get some normal town stuff, like a Chipotle and a bowling alley and stuff like that. But I know, exciting times. But it was still a very small town, and we were all kind of just thinking, you know, what can we do that's out there, a little different than this weekend, than what we typically do? And oddly enough, we all separately watched Ghost Adventures or Ghost Hunters and shows like that. And we're like, you know what? Let's venture somewhere. Let's do some research and find a spot that we want to go to. And admittedly, when we first did it, when we first did it, there were 12 of us. Now there's just three. But when we first did it, it was more of a novelty. It was something cool to talk about. You know, road trips are always half the fun, and being in high school, that was a big deal to us, driving like 4.5 hours up to Newcastle, Pennsylvania, to Hillview Manor. And after that night, you know, it stopped being a novelty and started being a passion. And 3 out of the 12 of us just kept at it. And I think at this point, one of the three just mainly helps out with research, but there are two of us that really just kind of go all around the U.S. doing this stuff.
Wow. So how much do you do it these days?
These days, I do it for, I guess, three reasons. I'll list them in a hierarchy. The most common reason I'm going out and doing an investigation is because a friend of mine who follows the page, not a single friend, but numerous friends who follow the page, if I'm back in Ohio or here in Scottsdale, where I currently live, will be like, oh, that's such a cool page, you should take me out sometime. And I'm never going to turn them down. Like, yeah, by all means, let's go to someplace. And so we'll usually just go to not a random place, but a well-known place. If I'm back in Ohio, we'll go to the Gill House, or we'll go to Bobby Mackey. That's like 45 minutes down the road.
Ooh, that place seems freaky.
It is. And oddly enough, being so close to it, what most consider one of the most haunted places in the country, I think it took 6 years in my paranormal career to actually realize just how close it was. I knew it was in Kentucky, but I didn't know Wilder was literally like on the border of Ohio and was like 45 minutes away. And I just kind of like hit myself in the head, like, gosh, I could have been going there for years now. But oh well. The second reason is because I am scouting a location to help a place begin doing paranormal investigations and figuring out what that marketing is going to require. And the third reason, which is the far more rare reason for going, is typically I've found a spot that I've never heard of before. I can't find anything about it, but I want to go there. I want to investigate it. I want to cover it, and I want to shoot a video on it. I think the last time I did that was Beach Army Hospital, like 10 months ago, but I have this one spot that I'm actually getting ready to go to. I don't want to mess up its name either. I have it listed here in my notes amongst a very expansive list of places that I'm trying to get to. The Johnson County Poor Farm and Asylum in Iowa. It is, I know a lot of places are called poor farms. This place is literally a farm, and they have old barns littered all across the property that if you actually step foot inside, but were refurbished like a century ago to be cages and I guess a makeshift prison for the asylum patients that they had coming in there. And this place has no online reputability or reputation, but, and I don't even know that it's haunted, but I'm going out there after talking with the property owners to check this place out. And they had some cool sherries, some cool stories to share and see if this is a place that people should start paying attention to, because as far as asylums go, I've never seen one like this.
Oh, have you been to LA at all to do any ghosty stuff?
I've been to San Diego. I have a brother who lives in LA. Well, my older brother, Colin, but I have not been there just yet. There are a number of places I want to go to there, but LA being, you know, it's expansive, but it's condensed at the same time, very high population area. A lot of the locations there, it's hard to get sole access to, or a lot of them wouldn't stay open later for any degree of an investigation, unless you have like a, you know, the budget of a network show behind you. So
see, that's the thing with LA. It's like so many of these places know about like charging people to rent, you know, for filming locations and stuff that it's like, we're not going to be fooled. Like here, we need money. We need the insurance. Like, yeah, it's a whole thing.
Yeah. It's difficult, but I'd love to come out there and do an investigation. I got, I know LA is where a big base of the Haunted Historian followers are from. And also because I would love to take my brother out on investigation. He is a huge skeptic, which doesn't bother me. It just makes me very adamant in wanting to show him, you know, kind of like a, you know, walk a mile in my shoes, see the things that I've seen over the course of the past, you know, 10, 12 years at these locations. And you wouldn't have a doubt in your mind that I really want to give him that chance to see some of this stuff.
But he never had any of the like gray mist at night.
He did. He was the first one to have that. And to be honest, I couldn't tell you why he doesn't really have any belief in it. He's one of those guys that a ghost could walk up right in front of him and slap him across the face and then just dissipate into the air, and he'd look around and like, you know, recoup, gather himself, like, all right, a weird wind phenomena, and then just go about his day.
See, that's the thing. That's what I'm saying. Like, there's so many places out here that, like, those kinds of people just live in, and you'll just never know that they're haunted until they move out and someone like me that's a loudmouth and wants to, like, tell the whole world about how interesting it is, then they'll know. But until then, you know, these poor ghosts are not getting the exposure.
They're not exact, and that's why I think I think one of the things that bothers me most about some shows, there are great teams on TV. They all go in to the owners or the people who have been there and are running it or have visited it and been haunted by it in the past, and they do it under the auspice saying, "We're going to solve this. We're going to figure it out. We're going to give a voice to these ghosts, and we're going to like take care of this haunting, and we're going to bring peace to the living at this location." And every single one of them will walk on in there they'll hear an EVP, absolutely lose their shit, run into the next room, and then the episode ends, and it'll just pan out in some aerial shot of the location. Like, we can say without a shadow of a doubt that, you know, X location is haunted. On to the next one. And it's like, you guys didn't do anything.
Well, but then the next season of the next TV show can go in there because the ghosts are still hanging out.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, I have some contact with a lot of people in these shows. They're all great people. They're all good investigators. You know, a lot of it is just luck. You know, I talk to some people who will reach out to the page wanting to know how to be an investigator. I'll tell them you can be an investigator just sitting on your couch and watching these shows. Like, but they want to get out there. They're like, we want to be a great investigator like you. And I'm like, it is very likely that you could be a better investigator than me in like half an hour. Like, anybody will ask the same questions. Everybody will use the same equipment. Everybody will recount the history. At the end of the day, you know, it's kind of like poker. It's just, it's the cards that you're dealt. Like, something's going to happen that night. Something's not. To say anybody's better than anybody is just, it's not true. Everybody can be an investigator, and there's literally just no hierarchy to it. Everyone's in the same playing field.
I just always think about how much time, like, it's, you can't always find stuff in a day and a half or 2 days. Like, it's just a matter of how the ghosts are feeling that day or whatever.
Exactly. And, you know, it's funny you say that because, yeah, one thing I would love to give my two cents on. I'm a very opinionated guy, if you haven't heard, figure that out already.
Give it to us.
One of the reasons we look for places that haven't been investigated or haven't been open to the public before is because I'm a big believer in spiritual fatigue. You know, if we're operating under the assumption that a location could potentially have an intelligent haunting, then you got to kind of think of those people as just obviously just human beings in a different realm. You know, the same as you or I wouldn't like some group of eight people walking into our house or walking into wherever we're inhabiting 4 or 5 times a week, demanding that we touch this or demanding that we say that or that we bang on a wall. After a period of time, you just stop listening. You just stop doing it. And that's why we look for the places that no one's been, because they're ripe. The spirits in there are waiting to have the opportunity to communicate, because they've never had that chance before. It leaves it less up to, you know, the universe and fate to see what happens tonight, and more so up to the investigator to seek out a place where they can actually have an impact.
See, now I have a little bit of a theory about here in Hollywood that there are so many actively haunted places because the ghosts are the kind of people that are like, time to perform. Like, they love the attention. I mean, I know a lot of people in my life that are living that when it's their time to be a ghost, it's going to be hard to shut them up. They're myself included. It's like, okay, let's, the more the merrier, come on in. I'm going to perform for you. But yeah, a lot of ghosts aren't that way.
Yeah, no, I mean, I too often think if I'm ever going to get the chance to be a ghost and if I will be haunting people. But I 100% agree with that theory. I think that's less of a theory. We can always claim that as more of a fact. I mean, it's Hollywood. It's the big city there. I mean, it's absolutely, that's got to be a reason. Whenever you do hear about a haunted location, I feel like they're usually noteworthy for their ghosts, their resident ghost being kind of famous figures.
Oh, totally. Or people that were trying to be famous, you know, unfinished business or that whole idea.
Absolutely. Just like the that Hollywood sign girl. I can't remember her name right now.
Peg Entwistle.
That's right. That's right.
Speaking of EVPs a moment ago, you want to hear some ghost voices?
Yeah, I'm very excited to hear these.
Okay, it's time for
EVPs
or EV please. Okay, so what I do is I go to YouTube, I find some EVPs, all kinds of people post these things, and you know, I think they're usually pretty legit, but sometimes it's hard to say. And I will say, especially over Zoom, it's tough, but I'll play it. give me a guess. Tell me what you think you hear. And then I'll give you some options of either, you know, well, it's what the investigator thinks it says. But you just tell me whatever you think you hear or whatever. Okay. Here we go. This first one is, it was posted by Mo Quinn Jr. on YouTube. And it is at the Sicka Hollow State Park in Northeast South Dakota. What is this ghost saying? It's a pretty quick one. I'll play it again.
Can I hear it one more time? I had like three things come to my mind. I heard a child. I heard it saying shh or like shut.
Okay. Wait, let me play it again.
I feel like I keep wanting to hear a child there, like a very muffled, like, a child.
Okay, I hear that. Okay, here's some options. One of these is what Mo Quinn Jr. thinks. Is it A, shut up? B, I'm Shauna? C, I should have? Or D, bruschetta? Okay, I'm going to play it again.
Oh, God, I hope it was D.
What do you think?
Of all those, I would say shut up. And just because the last one I thought was saying, I heard shut.
And that's what, yes, exactly. Yeah, it shut up. Yeah, here, I'll play it again. Okay, not too bad. All right, here's another one. This one is from Todd Sheldon on YouTube. And it is at, I believe it's at Todd's home. It's in Kennebunk, Maine. And you tell me what you hear.
Oh, that is a robotic voice right there.
Yes, I'm assuming that there was some editing going on here. We'll try it again. It's a little Daft Punk-y. What'd you say?
I hear it one more time.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. I gotta tell you, I don't have the foggiest. I can barely make out any kind of tone in that.
Okay, I'll give you some options. Is it A, hey girl, how you doing? B, hey turkey. C, does not compute. Or D, Lazy Susan. Okay, here we go. One more time.
I heard hey. I heard it. I hate to say it. I heard hey, girl.
Hey, girl, how you doing? Hey, girl, how you doing?
That, I've never heard an EVP that edited.
Hey, but that's what I'm saying. Maybe it's like, maybe it's a robot ghost. They believe it says, hey, turkey, like,
hey, turkey.
As in, like, I think they even wrote, like, they got called a turkey. Here, I'm going to play it again. Hey, turkey.
Oh, my God.
God, I love YouTube. Okay, let's do one more thing here. I'm just going to rattle off like a bunch of paranormally things, unexplained phenomenas. And I mean, since you're like a paranormal professional, I'm sure you'll have so much to say, but just, you know, give me a thought or an anecdote or a theory or something that comes to mind, okay?
All right.
What about demonic possession?
That is a tricky one for me. I think demons are far less present than a lot of popular paranormal media makes them out to be. I think most darkness, most ne'er-do-well spirits and occurrences people have are bad spirits, not demons. Mm-hmm. Mainly because a demon wants to not be known as a demon. They need to operate under secrecy and work to, you know, according to the Bible and all that stuff, take your soul. And whenever a person on TV or in a YouTube show or anything like that encounters what they dub a demon, they'll usually ask, like, what are you? And they'll be like, Satan or a demon. And it's like, guys, the second they say that, you know it's not a demon. Like, that should be the most
It's clear. Just like some cosplayer ghost or like somebody that like likes to do live action role plays or something.
Exactly. I have only had one experience with one. I helped out with the Catholic diocese in Columbus with an exorcism a couple years back. And that was probably the most horrifying night of my life. I never want to do anything like that again, but it definitely reaffirmed in my head that, you know, there's good and there is evil. And that was evil.
Connor. Okay. I have to wrap this up and I have to hear this. Can you please tell me about this? You can't just throw out that you went to an exorcism. What happened?
Well, this family had been getting terrorized for years. I had a cohort that I worked with out there in the Columbus area who reached out to me that he'd investigated this place a number of times, couldn't figure anything out that was going there beyond all the occurrences that were taking place. For the next 6 months, I had a correspondence with the husband and wife who lived there. They had three children, three relatively young children inside of the house. And we were trying to work out theories and I was trying to connect them with the right people to get this taken care of. It took a turn 1 week when the wife, all these people will remain nameless, of course, but it took a turn 1 week when I get a text from the father. The entire family is in the hospital. And I ask, oh my goodness, is everything all right? I kind of figured, you know, why you're reaching out to me about this. He says that they had woken up and their youngest daughter, who's about 5 years old, was just standing at the edge of their bed, Samora from The Ring, kind of style, hair hanging over her face.
Oh, just no.
In a trance. And she wouldn't move and she was kind of growling and she wouldn't do anything. They threw holy water at her and she kind of lifts her head up and is fine, almost just in a daze. But when that was all said and done, the wife had bruises and scratch marks and all these abrasions all across her body. And you know, I don't put a lot of stock in the people who tell me outlandish stories like that. They sent me all the pictures inside of the hospital room. They sent me all of the hospital reports. They were FaceTiming me and showing everything that was on her body. It was the most horrific thing I'd ever seen. I immediately contacted a clairvoyant I work with in Texas, my team in Ohio, my team in Arizona. We all converged at this house in Columbus with the archdiocese out there and went about performing what I guess is just a run-of-the-mill exorcism that you
run-of-the-mill.
It's just every other Friday, but it evoked activity that I didn't think existed. Things happened that, and I know you're trying to wrap it up. So
I want to hear it.
Okay, I was going to say I didn't want to like eat into that. Well, I'll give you three occurrences. First occurrence, we're all in the basement. We have the clairvoyant with us. The wife and the children have left. It's just the rest of us. The husband has stayed to help guide us through. When we walk into the basement, the clairvoyant looks to one portion of it and just starts shaking her head and just starts like murmuring to herself, like, no, that shouldn't be there. That's not supposed to be there. And we're all just looking at her, kind of like staring at each other. What is she talking about? And she turns back around and says the exact same thing to the husband, like not even directing it, just saying it at him. Just that shouldn't be there. Why is this here? Why is this happening? And he's very confused. He's looking at us like, should I be responding to this? And so I finally ask her, I'm just like, what are you talking about? What shouldn't be here? Like, what are you seeing or what are you trying to direct us towards right now? And she says, this entire portion of the basement, that's not supposed to be there. And the homeowner looks at her and he's like, you know, oddly enough, this was a mess up in the blueprints when we initially had the home built. They kind of messed up on like the width on their parcel of land and it started going one way when they were supposed to be going another. And so they just ended up in an extra large basement with this entire like 20 by 20 portion that originally wasn't supposed to be there. And she's shaking her head for like a minute. And finally just like looks back over into this dark area of the basement, just like, it shouldn't be there. That's where she was. And we're just like looking at her like, who's she? And she just like something out of The Conjuring just turns around and looks at me and just like, that's where she was buried. And we're just like, who was buried there? And I go out of my way to ensure that I can disprove everything in the world. I personally believe in like 15% of the occurrences that I've seen because I work so hard to disprove them. And I say that because once she said that again, the table in the middle of the room flipped over. I mean, we caught it on video, the living room table flipping over. And she starts like screaming, the clairvoyant. And she's like, you can't do this. You don't belong here. And you hear footsteps running up the uncovered wooden stairs of the basement, heading back up into the foyer. And she's chasing it. The rest of us are just standing there watching her chase this thing. And we don't know what's going on. And we sprint up there. We're trying to follow her. The priests are there. And they're just kind of just like, because this was the tour. We hadn't really started anything yet. And we get up there into the main room. And she's like spinning. Like she's like looking all around her, the clairvoyant is, in the middle of the living room. As though something's like enveloping her or wrapping around her. And then she just stops. Like she stops so fast, you would have thought someone like wrapped their arms around her and just stopped her. And she turns around and she looks at the homeowner, at the husband there. And she just starts nodding her head. And she's like, everybody get away from him. And we get away from him. And she kind of gets this weird smile, which we kind of thought looked maniacal, but we kind of figured out later is because she finally found it. And she looks at him and she's like, I need you not to move. And he's like, is everything okay? And she's like, you're fine. She's just right behind you. And so the second she says that, I just kind of like lose it. I'm like, just start reading the scripture. And so the priest break open the Bible and they start reading this like highlighted verse they had. They read it one time and you hear it sounds like a male and a female talking in the kitchen. And I keep saying after every time they read it, do it again, do it again, do it again. And every time they do it again, something new happens. The first time we hear the voices in the kitchen. The second time, the investigator we had sitting at the base of the stairs going to the upper floor, kind of like it's almost like pushed forward into the staircase leading up to the kids' playroom. And he's like, what the hell was that? Who pushed me? And you hear the footsteps as he falls over going up the stairs. I say, read it again. You see this white, weird, eerie mist walk across the bedroom, the door of the playroom and go in there. I say, read it again. And you hear the toys and the chairs up there just like clamoring as though something's tossing everything, destroying the room. And we say, hear it again. And you just hear it sounds like somebody slamming with their full weight against the wall. And we rush up there because we didn't know what to think. We were just completely overcome what we had just experienced. And we get up there and we stop. And she kind of starts sweating, the clairvoyant does. And she's like, well, we have it for now. And we're like, we have what for now? And she points back to a tent. She hasn't been in this room yet. She hasn't seen anything in this room yet. But she points behind this pink princess tent the kids had and said, that's where it stays. And I'm like, inside of that tent? And she's like, no, behind the tent. And we go over there and we move the tent. And again, she has no idea what's in there. When we move it, there is this weird old boarded up crawl space that's just going above the parents' bedroom that none of them had ever been inside of, that they didn't really mess around with since they bought the home. But she says, that's where it's staying right now. And the second she says that, the homeowner is just like, that makes sense. Like the other two psychics we've had here has said, it's up here. And we couldn't do anything else for the night. We had to like get a person who specializes in portals up from Florida there later on in the year. But I thought it was going to be the first time I got in my car to leave that we actually proved something to the homeowners, that whatever is there, whatever darkness is there, whatever is attacking them and possessing their daughter and hurting the wife, it has a weakness. You know, you can read scripture, you can show strength, you can show, you know, you're going to stand your ground and you can face this thing. And I called my investigator saying that after we were done, like, we should be proud of what we just did. But the second I say that into the phone while we're all getting on the highway leaving that house that night, Alex, the guy I work with out of Ohio, is like, Connor, we didn't do anything. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, I just got off the phone with the homeowner. I'm like, is he okay? Are they scared? Are they leaving again? Once the girls and the wife came back, I think it took 10 minutes for us to be gone. They put the kids to bed and they went into their red bedroom to get ready for the night. They stood inside of their restroom that has an adjacent door leading into their walk-in closet. And as they're standing there, they just hear clear as day, something standing in the doorway of their closet, and it's whistling Daisy, Daisy to them. like just like da 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 da, and the wife barricades herself in the shower. And the husband is kind of just like backing up. He says that he's like throwing random stuff from the counter into the closet. And the second he does that, you hear like three thundering footsteps walk out of the closet and just stand in the middle of the restroom. And they could just feel it looking at them. It didn't want them. It wanted something else. And that's what he said. That's what he said to the wife. He said, "It doesn't want us. It wants something else. It's like, you don't scare us." And the second he did that, they just hear it, again, the same thundering footsteps leave the room and sprint upstairs towards the kid's bedroom. And that was the last I heard of it.
Oh, my God. It's very rare on this podcast. Well, it's happened a few times where I'm like, I don't know if I can take it anymore. This is too scary. This is so scary. This sounds like something from a movie.
It felt like a movie. There, that is a small taste of it. There, I've talked fully about it before, but it could be like a full 2-hour ordeal outlining start to finish. It was a horrifying evening. I didn't necessarily not believe in demons or anything like that, but I, after traveling so much and not encountering any and really being able to chalk most of it up to human entities, I didn't have too much stock in it. But that night really changed things.
I want to talk about it more. Can you please come back one of these times?
Yeah, I'd be more than welcome to come back and just talk about The Exorcism.
Please do. Okay, well, I have to wrap it up here, but thank you so much for coming on. And can you tell people once again, you know, about your Instagram and where to find you and all that stuff?
Absolutely. It is at haunted.historian on Instagram and at the Connor Gossel on Facebook. Facebook was made at the beginning of this year, so the following is not quite as large, but it's definitely grown fast. But those are the outlets you can find us on. Shoot us your encounters, your stories, or different regions, specific places you want investigated. We're always looking for, you know, insight from people that, you know, might know better than us about a lot of these places.
And you're an amazing storyteller. I'm also going to throw that in there, obviously based on this conversation. And thank you so much. What a dream of a guest. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much to the haunted historian, Connor Gossel. And again, go follow the Instagram page at haunted.historian. I'm working on some new guests for the show. Very excited, so make sure you guys are subscribed. Hey, go tell your friends. Tell your friends about the show. Pass the word along. I always appreciate it. Please give the show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. And if you have a ghost story, you can write it in a 5-star review. Or you could just write something nice about me. Or you could put a ghost story in the Facebook group, Ghosted by Roz Dresfeles. You could follow me on Instagram at Roz Hernandez. I'm on Cameo, Roz Dresfeles. Oh, what else? You want to be on a listener episode? We've got a good one. I just recorded it. It comes out next week. If you want to be on an upcoming one, email me at ghostedbyroz@gmail.com with the subject line listener episode. And if you want to buy some exclusive Ghosted by Roz Dresfeles merch, go to the Instagram, the link in my Instagram bio. You can find it there. And, you know, if you don't have Instagram, send me an email. I'll send you the link. I love you all, both living and dead.
But if I didn't ask you to haunt me, don't haunt me. Okay, bye.
Star Bands Audio, a podcast, a podcast network.